All that fresh air and poultry got me hungry. So let's head back to the New York kitchen of Wiley Dufresne at his restaurant, WD-50.
We had a course that tasted like Fruit Loops. We had a drink that tasted like a Tootsie Pop. We had a dessert course that tasted like pancakes, maple syrup, and smoked sausage. And none of those ingredients were in any of those dishes.
But all of it combined somehow was very childhood-like, and we think Barbie hair.
Yeah, and it was great.
Today we're making something more basic, Eggs Benedict.
You know, I've read about the heat in kitchens and never until this moment experienced it. And I'm sure this isn't even as hot as it gets.
Wiley really does love those fresh organic eggs from Knollcrest Farm, but his cooking also relies on some of the sorts of chemicals you'd see on a packet of Twinkies.
It's interesting, as the rest of us over these last 30 years have sort of been taught that we should... you know, go natural and go organic. And when we read the ingredients on the side of a package, we go, ew, look at all these chemicals I'm eating. You've sort of swum in precisely the opposite direction of saying, hey, maybe these things are useful and interesting.
Well, they are, but I'm still using, you know, delicious lamb. And I'm buying the same carrots that the slow food people are. But no, I don't think it's at odds. I mean, it's important that we find out how these things are made and what goes into it. And are they, in fact, you know, safe? And if so, how can we incorporate them into our repertoire in some smart, clever, interesting ways?
Scientists have been bringing us better living through chemistry, creating and tinkering with regular supermarket food for decades. Scientists like John Coupland, who teaches at Penn State. His field is, quote, ingredients as materials. He recently co-authored a paper about making ice cream at higher temperatures. I asked John Coupland to join us at Restaurant WD-50.
I think there's a freedom in this world towards genuine innovation, which is much harder in the mass market food industry. And it's interesting to think about creativity. I think chefs and scientists have very different views of creativity, but they're both very good ways of solving problems.
Formally, ingredients as materials is your subject. What does that mean in the course of a course that you teach?
I think it's thinking about the ingredients in a food as the materials that build up that food structure. We're very used to thinking about plastics and steel and concrete as being combinations of different types of ingredients which fit together in certain ways to deliver certain properties. We're very uncomfortable thinking like that with foods. The idea of if you're going to make a cheese sauce, the different ingredients are contributing different material properties. Something is helping give it a smooth texture. Something is making it very viscous when it's hot. Something is going to make it set up when it cools down a little bit. And the studying the chemicals and the processes that go into that, we take a material science approach, and we try and apply that stuff to foods.
Which people, as you're suggesting, kind of naturally resist, because cooking and eating is in this other human folk tradition than what people take as a matter of course in steel and brick and concrete.
Completely fascinating. I think how if you look at a food label, and you mentioned earlier about look at all these chemicals in the food, ooh, the food industry is very aware of that reaction, puts a huge amount of effort to reduce the label, to have as few things listed as they possibly can. And now, in this context, in Wiley's context, much more free to innovate and deliver the functionality, as we call it, the properties of enjoyed during eating, using whatever is necessary.
Well, I hope so. I mean, we're trying to be responsible. We're trying to, understand the ingredients. I mean, there's our liquid nitrogen delivery for the day, you can see.
Being the liquid nitrogen.
But there are a number of ingredients that I have downstairs that I've not used because I'm not satisfied with how they're made.
What gives you pause?
Let's say that it's completely manufactured, generated in a laboratory.
Right.
You know, they can create strawberry flavor, and they can deliver it to you in a jar, and it can be the most delicious strawberry you ever have, but there's no strawberry in it.
So what stops you from using it?
Because I'm conflicted. Not that I necessarily think it's wrong, but I haven't convinced myself that it's okay.
John, should Wiley have qualms or pause about using entirely lab-created ingredients?
I think he should have pause because he's running a business. But the ingredients that you're allowed to use in food, certainly in the food industry, are very tightly regulated and controlled. People have given a lot of thought about this. They know the molecules which are present in those ingredients. If you took something like a dried mushroom extract, you have no idea what chemicals are in that at all. Things can be quite comfortably poisonous and natural. And as a scientist, I know that the distinction between natural and synthetic is not a helpful one.
Penn State food scientist John Coupland. We're making Eggs Benedict today, along with Wiley Dufresne in his kitchen at WD50, and our yolks are poaching in the water vat. And so what are the other components of this?
The other major component is the hollandaise. We have a couple of batches here. Yeah, this is a double batch.
Of yolks and whites.
Yolks and whites.
Separated.
And the butter is melted right over there. And ostensibly what we need to do is we need to get the different hydrocolloids in here that are going to help with the functionality of the product.
Hydrocolloids, again, being thickening agents.
They're long-chain polysaccharides.
And it looks like the stuff that you'd see splattered on people in a Nickelodeon program. Or you
well,
know,
it does have that sort of unpleasant sort of, you know, Ghostbusters-type vibe to it.
Yeah, kind of gooey.
It is. And this one is a starch. This one is, a waxy maize starch that's been pre-hydrated in such a way so that we can just whisk it into water. We don't have to cook it out the way you cook out flour or cornstarch. It's been instantized, like Tang or something like that, or Ovaltine. They've been instantized so that you can stir them into your drink without them fisheyeing or clumping or doing something like that. And so what we're going to do basically is we're going to put the yolks in the blender. We're going to add these gums to it. And then the trick was we need, once the hollandaise is done in the blender, it has to be poured out. And then the only way to portion it that we could figure out, or the most effective way to portion it, was to take the sauce, the emulsion, and gel it so that we could cut it. We could shape it however we wanted. And then ultimately we thought, of course, the right thing to do would be to bread it in English muffin.
Crumbs?
Yeah. So we buy a case of English muffins a week, and we dry them in the oven, grind them up. The fryer, John, the fryer's on, right? The fryer is over there. So we're just going to get some hollandaise fried up.
So those are essentially large dice.
Yeah, these are big cubes.
Inch by inch cubes.
Big cubes of hollandaise that are now frozen.
Now, have you thought about, like, if that was available in my supermarket, I'd buy those. Why don't you sell Wiley Dufresne, hollandaise cubes?
You know, there was a time when we came up with the mayo, and I thought, okay, deep fried mayonnaise. You know, McDonald's is going to call me, and I'm going to get rich. I bought a special red and yellow phone for when they called and everything, you know, figuring that this is it.
And there are chefs working in food companies now in collaboration with food scientists who would probably take it from that next step. Look, here's an idea. Here's something that basically works. Now let's see. Can we do this in a toaster oven? And we can't see fried mayonnaise on the shelves now. But in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, we might do. This is where ideas like this come from.
Should we go to the fryer? Yeah. Will you give these to Rich,
So you
please?
Put 20 or so of the cubes into the deep fat. How long do those cook?
Just until they're golden brown. I mean, they're still cold in the center, so we're going to finish them in a low oven to heat through.
Uh-huh.
So there you go. They're nice and golden brown. I mean, you want to taste one? It's not, you can see it's not warm yet.
Right. Mmm. But
it's getting there.
It's getting there.
It's getting there. It's gonna have some acidity. Again, the idea is that it's the texture of a hollandaise on a plate.
I mean,
it's still emulsified.
I could have 10 of those and that's my dinner. I mean, that's
And I'd sit right next to you, and I'd be happy to pump your heart.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Rich, do you have some yolk? We have. Hollandaise in the oven.
No, this is...
This is the Canadian bacon.
Ah, that looks good. And these are chives.
And this is black salt from Cyprus.
Wow, it's beautiful. It looks... Salt would have been low on my list of guesses for what that is. And one of these eggs, of the two on each plate, you sort of mash down with your thumb.
I kind of like that there are certain elements on the plate that are very, like, sharp and clean and geometric, and then there's a certain organic element to the plate as well. It's sort of a nice blend of the two. Food is hot. Food goes to the table. You guys want to sit down and we'll bring you some plates?
Excellent.
All right.
Excellent.